Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. So before we start today's show with my friend Andrew Siciliano, I just want to take a quick second to address what's going on in our country right now. All of the protests in the wake of the killings of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, so many others. Like a lot of you listening, I care about these things because I care about basic human rights, which I believe have been and continue to be denied to many Black people. I also wanted to add, though, this is a story and an issue that I think does inform what we discuss here on this podcast, which sounds crazy, but this is a football podcast. It's not a place where we normally talk about things like police violence or civil liberties, but I never lose sight of the fact that I cover a league here that is 70% Black, league where just 6 years ago, a quarterback named Colin Kaepernick protested the exact same issues that are driving this conversation today, and in doing so, found himself out of the NFL, becoming, as my colleague and frequent collaborator Bill Barnwell pointed out in 2017, the only young, healthy, experienced quarterback in the history of the modern NFL to never play another down. It's a league where race does inflect the way players are described, evaluated, the opportunities that are afforded to different people, which is something we have, of course, discussed here. I'm not talking about that today with my guest, and there's really no way to transition from that discussion to a football show. That's not a little awkward, but I just wanted to mention it because it is on my mind, and as we all are working towards figuring out how to do better as a country on all matters pertaining to racism and racial injustice, not just when it's obvious to everyone, but when it's subtly malicious and easy to brush aside and quote-unquote controversial, I just wanted to say that in this particular format, it is important for me to do better, too, always. So on that note, here is the awkward transition I promised. As I teased earlier, I am joined today by my friend, my colleague from the summertime. He's like someone I know from camp almost. You know him from watching football on Sundays, Red Zone. I know him as a pal. He is the conductor, the maestro of the NFL. Andrew Siciliano. What's up, bud?
What's up, pal? That's a very nice introduction. Thank you. And tip of the cap to you, if it's Mutual Admiration Society, which of course it is, for eloquently trying to put into words what all of us are trying to come to grasp with. And that is, yeah, we're not blind nor deaf to the community. And the NFL community is as affected as every other community in every corner of the country. And it's something that I try or have tried to get across the last couple of days starting my show on NFL Network. And that is, this is and always will be a football show. But right now, we're all affected, and the NFL community is as much a part of this as anyone else's community. And to pretend like the rest of the world is not around us is foolish and naive and counterproductive.
So you are actually joining me right now coming off of listening to a call with Coach Sean McVay of the Rams, who we're going to talk about. By the way, we're going to talk about the Rams. We're going to talk about Andrew's beloved Browns today. And then we're gonna talk about his job and some other things NFL related. But first I want to ask you, what Coach McVay conveyed on that call. I saw some stuff on Twitter about the conversations he's having with his players right now.
Yeah. So they had their group meeting yesterday, the regularly scheduled Monday group video conference, as everyone's been doing now for, you know, a month. And he said it wasn't a meeting. It was a let's talk, let's listen, let's mourn. That's his word, not mine. And let's just get it all out. There's no football today, basically. Let's talk. And, you know, he said something interesting as well that maybe, and I asked this question, an Artist Kleiman, the Rams head of PR, who was with the team, obviously, in St. Louis and saw firsthand everything that happened in Ferguson. They both said that the virtual setting actually may have helped a lot. Said it was a very powerful conversation, but that some of the players might have actually felt a little bit more comfortable in the safety of their own homes, in a bubble, and without having to stand in an auditorium, and and see 120 people looking back at them and wondering, is my voice loud enough? You're at home, you can let it out. And it led to a powerful conversation. And Sean is in perspective. And he said that, well, you know, many of us view him as this young, woke, totally with the coach. He did use the word woke. I am now probably in the, you know, poorly, by the way, that it even caused him to say, well, you know, maybe I haven't been listening enough, or, you know, there's a lot of, hey, how you doing? How's your family? Okay, great. Let's go. But that we need to go deeper than that. And he said that he would support any protest, any demonstration, any show of solidarity from his team this season. That he was really proud of everyone there for getting it out and for listening. I think that's the key thing here is just listening, because without a common sense of shared humanity here and listening, we're nowhere.
It's crazy to hear you mention the St. Louis thing, right? And how artists from there, because we never think about the Rams in St. Louis, candidly, right. You know, and especially because they had so much turnover in personnel. I mean, they really, you know, aside from a few people, wiped that team clean in a lot of ways coming to Los Angeles. And in you saying that, I was reminded of how in 2014, after Mike Brown was killed, right, in Ferguson, by Darren Wilson, the police officer. I remember now, it's all coming back, that I don't remember which Rams, but there were five of them. I know Kenny Britt was one of them, and I believe Tavon Austin as well, who came out of the tunnel in that game in St. Louis with their hands in the air in the don't shoot pose. And I remember vividly Jeff Fisher saying that was their choice. It was free speech. They're not disciplined or whatnot. But there was a lot of backlash at the time. And it is interesting to reflect on, I guess, how much the conversation has not and has evolved since then, and vis-a-vis these coaches now, the way they're handling it is different. There's still a long way to go. It's just very interesting to think about the passage of time in that way.
Yeah, and artists, you know, for those who don't know the layout geographically of St. Louis very well, Ferguson is really right down the road from Earth City. The Rams trained you know, kind of north and west of the city, but it was really only like three exits on the highway away. So, you know, you pull out of the Rams building, you can see the smoke down the highway. It was close to home in every sense of the phrase. And there was a backlash. I mean, you did have the police in St. Louis who provided security for game day, as almost every, you know, every city has that, every team has that. They didn't want to show up and the conversation was awkward. And I mean, look, if I get backlash for this, I'll say it. St. Louis is not the most welcoming town for some. Let's just call it like it is. And it was not comfortable at all. And honestly, I can't process everything clearly from back then, but it certainly was not something happening in every corner of our country. It was localized. Certainly there were protests other places, but not like now. And the Rams are on an island a bit. Now it's spread to some other places. You mentioned the Browns. I remember some Browns coming out of the tunnel and the backlash that was felt there. I even remember when Kenny Britt later signed with the Browns, how there was still residual effect with that. You know, people didn't forget and they wanted to hold it against him. He's an interesting leader in retrospect. I mean, if that story is ever written. But yeah, there is holdover from the organization. I also think it's important that, I'll just name drop here, Molly Higgins, who's as good as there is in community relations for the Rams, was a holdover as well. And someone who moved with the team, much like Artis. And, she's been invaluable for this group's efforts in the community. And I sound like a shill here, but I'm talking about good people and friends that I have no doubt that when we all can get back out in the community, COVID hopefully allows us to do that, that this team will do the same.
Yeah. Well, I said the awkward transition was going to come at the top of the show, but I think now is when I'm going to do the awkward transition.
Football.
Where we start talking about the Rams. Yeah. No, I I want to keep having this conversation. And to Coach McVay's point about letting his players protest the way they want to, I think that's something worth keeping an eye on as the season progresses. Yeah. Not just with the Rams, but with all teams, because it never went away. It's not going away. But I think there is a greater willingness now to have these conversations. So you and I first started working together. First met really last summer. But you've been working with the Rams for a while. You're very familiar with this team, and it is a team. I would describe it as a team in transition. By the way, I'm going to do division previews for every division as I always do, starting possibly next week if I decide. I haven't decided yet. So I will cover the Rams and the Browns when I talk about the NFC West and the AFC North. But I want to talk about these teams in particular with you because you know them very well. And with the Rams, I kind of wanted to just zero in on, and this is something we think about as we approach the preseason, what the big questions are with this team. And in my mind, Andrew, I have three big questions that I think will sort of determine the direction of the season. The first one, and I think you'd agree with me, is the offensive line fixed or better or going to be better?
I think it's problem number one and issue number one, although I think maybe 1A is linebacker and just overall, you know, amount of talent on defense with the new coordinator now that seemingly everyone's left. But yeah, O-line's huge. And we even had it this morning on NFL Now, shameless plug. Brian Baldinger went back to week one because the question was, what's Todd Gurley going to do with Dirk Cutter this year? And he went back to week one and showed the Panthers front seven absolutely destroying an inexperienced Rams offensive line with Brian Allen and Joe Noteboom starting on the road against seven first-round picks on that front seven, and how Todd Gurley had nowhere to run. It wasn't only – I mean, we're not going to go too deep down the Todd Gurley hole here, but I mean, that wasn't the only issue certainly last year. But Brian Allen and Joe Noteboom, the Rams, I think – how do I say this? I think the concept was the right concept. And that is John Sullivan had seen his best days pass. You let John Sullivan go after the Super Bowl. Roger Saffold, you weren't going to give him a third big contract. You let him go. And you had taken guys and given them redshirt years. Allen and Noteboom notably. And you say, this is what we do. We draft guys. We develop them. We let them sit. We let them learn. Then we plug them in for higher price veterans. And you hope they work well. They didn't. They didn't necessarily work well. And then they both got hurt. And then that growth was stunted. Now, you have Edwards and you have Evans, who were last year's rookies, who both certainly had their moments. McVay said last week that he really could see Evans as a full-time starter at guard. And he doesn't normally say things like that.
Yeah,
he doesn't
yes.
really, put it this way. It was seen by me and some others as a hint. Now, the question is, does that mean we're confident Rob Havenstein, right tackle, you're going to win and hold on to that job? And then where do we put Bobby Evans later? Or does Evans beat him out? I am rambling here, as you know.
No.
Prone to do. But they have to fix these issues. If they do, and they have faith that Aaron Cromer can coach them up, then they hope to get back to the ability to run the football, because without running the football, without the play action, as you well know, then Jared Goff is a very different quarterback.
1,000%. It really all stems from this. And I think some people were surprised that the Rams didn't pursue an offensive lineman either in the draft or really free agency, right, aggressively. I wasn't as surprised myself because they have in the past, there are all these guys on the roster, right, that they can either hope take a leap forward, bounce back in some cases, come back from injury. Like, they have the personnel. I think there's just question marks. So on the outsides, they brought back Andrew Whitworth, I think on a multi-year deal, right? It was like 2 or 3 years or something.
I think that's some fancy schmancy salary cap.
Yeah,
that's a salary cap shell game right there.
Man, you never know with left tackles, though, these days.
I hope he plays till he's 100.
I hope he plays as long enough to make me feel young, because I just like seeing his age on that depth chart. But so you got Whitworth on left, who really, you know, he played well last year. He had a lot more penalties, I think, in part because of some of the rule changes. But he played well. The right side was the issue with Havenstein going from, you know, his career best year to his career worst year. It was kind of shocking. So you got to think – while maybe he won't hit that previous high, you got to think what we saw last year isn't it. You know what I mean? But you never know. So, but that's pretty much settled. And then there's just a lot of question marks on the inside. It's interesting to me to hear you say, McVay singled out Evans as a potential guard because last year they were, you know, when they had all those injuries, I remember they were using him a bit, at tackle. And then they had David Edwards playing guard. So those were the two, I think, third and fifth draft picks from the prior year. There's Nope Boom, Austin Corbett, who you know well from Cleveland. Blythe was, I thought, played pretty well. And then, of course, Brian Allen. So there's all these guys, and I don't know what the Rams think, but I think there's a lot of question marks about who's going to play where, who's going to start. But to cut back to your point about the offense, you know, when, and this, the second question I have is, can Jared Goff bounce back as well, right? And so much of that flows from the offensive line because of the circumstances in which he has demonstrated he can succeed.
Yeah. Did you catch any of, a couple of weeks ago, earlier in the quarantine when I believe it was ESPN on a Monday night replayed the 2018 game on Thursday night at the Coliseum with the Chiefs, the 54-51 game?
I did.
And did you have the same reaction I did, which was sitting there hopefully with your feet up in a glass of wine? I think I had scotch that night. And just look at some of the throws Jared made and go, like, oh, holy bleep. Yeah. Like, yes, I was at that game. Yes, I've seen with my own two eyes. This can be that guy. Like it's there for everyone that wants to trash Jared. He's given enough moments, you know, for criticism, believe me. But that guy is also there. It's just all got to be marrying the run game and the O-line together with the pass game. I have faith it's there. I don't know if it's going to ever get back to 2018, but even just moving the needle halfway back to that, they were a 9-win team last year. So you move the needle back a little bit. That's major progress.
I agree. Yes, by the way, in that game, he has some of the most beautiful deep passes in particular.
Oh my God.
I saw the entire that season. But yeah, I think, look, there's a reason Jared Goff was picked where he was. And this is something I even thought when he struggled, right, early in his career, which is he's got a great arm. He is tough. He hangs in there. It's funny because, like, I don't think he's the best quarterback under pressure, but that doesn't always mean a quarterback's not tough and willing to sort of hang in there, right?
Sure.
And take risks. He does struggle sometimes when he's asked to be a traditional dropback passer in third and long. I mean, the thing that people forget about the Rams juggernaut offense in 2018 was how rarely he found himself in those situations, because the run game, they were so deadly running the ball and on play action on early downs that they really just didn't have to go away from it, right? And we all knew the McVay formula that year, always with the 11, always with the wide zone, those compressed formations, right, where the receivers can also, it's easier for them to hang in there and block, and then the constant use of sweeps and jet actions and that kind of thing that creates so much confusion for the defense, right? We knew what was happening, but as the offensive line disintegrated, we saw, and you, last year, I think this was on display, we saw McVay deviating from that and building and trying to create, he changed the run game so much last year in subtle ways. They had a lot of success, for example, running duo, not just outside zone. So I'm very curious to see if his offense continues to evolve. For example, last year, one of their best games, the Seattle game, which was one of, I think, Goff's probably, I don't know if it was the best game. I'm talking about the win.
He made
one of his best games
in that game. Yeah.
And they ran a ton of 12 in that game. I was shocked by how often they had two tight ends on the field. So I think I have some questions like this year. Are we going to see, you know, they went out and they drafted a running back, right, in the second round, in Cam Akers. Are we going to see, now that they've got him and Henderson, are we going to see multiple running backs on the field? I guess that would be my question to you. Do you anticipate this Rams offense evolving?
I do, and the part of the fun, I think, and I think we went through this last year too, but I know certainly part of the fun this summer is trying to project or trying to squeeze out of them what that's going to be. We were on a call last week with Kevin O'Connell, and I said – knowing that he and Sean didn't really overlap, but knowing that still the basic tenets of the offense are the same, I said, Kevin, now that you're here, right? Sean always talks about evolving, trying to stay ahead of people, trying to adapt. Now that you're here, compare what Sean's offense looks like now to what you had with Jay. How has it evolved? I was trying to lead him into that, and he wouldn't really bite. He gave me a bunch of cliches, and I'm like, oh, I'm trying here. But I do think that what you saw in that Seattle game will be something we see more of. Is it going to be the only thing? No, not at all. They did go draft Rice and Hopkins. They do already have two tight ends on the roster.
Yeah.
That especially one in Tyler Higbee that finally seemed to have the light go on late last year. So they it didn't seem to be a need. I think that's one where maybe you step back and go, is there hidden, not hidden meeting here, but is there a purpose rather than just best player on the board? And as for the Cam Akers thing, I don't know if there is like this big realization Darrell Henderson isn't who we thought he was. He just didn't get on the field. I think a huge part of any rookie running back getting on the field is trusting him with pass pro, especially on third down and third and long, when you're not getting a big push on first and second down, and when your O-line is a mess and you can't get play action and you're ending up in third and long more than you should, then the rookie running back, who's not the biggest guy to begin with, isn't generally going to get on the field on third down. It's just not going to happen. So that's why Malcolm Brown is in there when Todd Gurley takes a seat on third down. So I think that was part of it. I think the other part is they just love Cam Akers, and they love his versatility. They love his power. People forget that in Mississippi as a kid, he was the best running. He was a Parade All-American, the best running back in Mississippi. And he played a lot of quarterback. He had like 8,000 passing yards in high school. So, yes, get ready for trickery, too, as I ramble.
He also played behind a terrible, terrible offensive line in college. So if there's anyone who can turn lemons into lemonade, to go back to some of the issues with protection there. And that's something I actually really look forward to seeing in the preseason, Andrew, because last year I think you and I saw Darrell Henderson, who, again, you know, in preseason, you're not, with McVay in particular, you're not playing behind the starters. He really struggled to show out behind the backups and all that. I suspect Cam Akers might show out a bit. The other question, though, I did want to ask you about the Rams. I think the other big question is, with their new defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley, who is mercifully older than me, what is this defense going to look like? As you mentioned, a linebacker, I believe, is the biggest question mark on this entire roster. I know I mentioned the offensive line, but that's more about like who's going to play where. With linebacker, having lost Corey Littleton, who I think is one of the most underrated defensive players in the NFL from the last few years, especially in coverage, they did replace, you know, Dante Fowler in terms of the pass rush with Leonard Floyd. But in the middle of the field, I am very curious to see who plays there, right? And I'm also very curious to see what Brandon Staley's defense looks like, because I truly do not know.
I don't think any of us do. I think when Wade left, you went, all right, well, you're coming in with, like, if you're getting rid of Wade Phillips, we need a name. Oh, wait, who's this guy? who's Brandon Staley? I haven't met him yet, full disclosure, partly because of this quarantine life we live in. I talked to him on a conference call last week. He's an impressive dude, and he is already, and I give him credit, he is already learning from Sean McVay to name check everyone in his answers to the media and not really say anything. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, he's just he lists the names of players. He lists the names of coaches and mentors. And he didn't really say a lot. But the two things that stood out, number one, Mina, is that I think we're going to see Jalen Ramsey move around a lot. I think he's a chess piece, really more than just a corner. I think that's how Staley views him. And the other thing is, and he said this more than once, is that his goal, it's a goal, is to get the double team off Aaron Donald. But that's far easier said than done, because On pass rushdowns, he was, I believe PFF had him double teamed 59.6% of the time. And I asked Aaron, hey, he says his goal is to get rid of the double team. How is he going to do that? And Aaron kind of smiled and shook his head. And it wasn't like a, like, I doubt this guy. He was like, yeah, that's what he told me, but kind of like shrugged his shoulders. Like, I don't know. Like, and I can't know yet because I'm on a Zoom in Pittsburgh. Like, I want to get on the field. And that's one of the things he's like, Aaron said, I'm sick of working out here. I want to get on the field because I want to see all these things Brandon Staley is telling me about this defense that I can only conceptualize now, but I can't actually go do.
Playing on the defensive line next to Aaron Donald is like acting in a movie with Meryl Streep. Like, step up your game, right? And it's never going to be easier for you. And I think, you know, we saw, I mean, Fowler benefited from it. We see guys benefit from it, but we haven't really seen, I think, that sort of force multiplier thing, right? Where the presence and the fact that he gets triple team, man. Like, we haven't seen a player fully unlocked in the way that they should be next to him, even if they can't get those doubles off of him. I will say this about Brandon Staley. I know I was like, I don't know anything about him. I do know something, which is that he is a linebacker's coach. He coached linebackers under the linebacker god, Vic Fangio. So I don't know who's going to play the position, but I do know they brought in someone where that is their specific area of expertise. So we'll see what that looks like. And that is, you know, hey, not that I'm like, people need a tease to watch preseason, but that is something that might get sussed out a little bit in the preseason. So, I'm interested. I don't know if last year, I mean, I say that last year, I think the only starter who did play in week three, for the Rams was, he got hurt.
Micah Kizer.
Yeah, Micah Kizer. So we were like, oh, that's why he doesn't start his starters. But
it's exactly why.
Yeah, I know.
The thing that I don't know yet, and I know we've talked about this off there, is what does the preseason look like? And how Matt Nagy came out Friday and said, well, I'm going to do it different this year. I'm playing my starters because, A, we have a quarterback competition, and B, I think my team needs to be tougher. Okay, that's great. Well, what about the guys that say we never play starters like Sean McVay because we want to keep everyone healthy? Yes. What if you only have two preseason games?
Let's talk about this now because I'm going to talk about the end, but that's something I have been pondering. How our teams, every team is taking a different approach to the quote unquote virtual offseason, right? I mean, Sean Payton is just not having one. Shout out to Sean Payton. We don't yet know when actual, you know, training camp or whatever is going to start. It's looking, if you had asked me this 3 weeks ago, I would have said there's not going to be any training camp. It looks like there will be. Again, that's not based on reporting or concrete information. It's just based on the direction things seem to be moving in. So I do wonder if let's say training camp comes back in time and all the preseason games are back to normal, if we will see no deviation, or if just the sheer fact that these teams didn't get to have a normal, you know, May and June will lead them to try to take advantage of that shortened season or those games rather.
Yeah, it's, I think I hate to say we have no idea yet because everything's up in the air. But we have no idea yet because everything's up in the air. And I honestly feel that, yeah, I'm with you that there's more momentum. There's certainly more momentum and more of a belief now than there was a week ago or even 2 or 3 weeks ago, certainly that we're going to have something this summer. I just don't know what it is. I mean, our friend Todd Archer is reporting, as you and I record this right now, that it looks like the Cowboys are not going to go to Oxnard, which means they would stay in Dallas, which I think has made sense and has been their direction now for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But what do the Rams do? What do the Chargers do? Can the 49ers get anything done in Santa Clara County? And if you can't have camp in Santa Clara County at their own building, can you have preseason games in Santa Clara County? Could we have neutral site preseason games? Is that worth the trouble? I think the biggest question, and I think it's a question that we're seeing hockey and baseball and the NBA grapple with,
is, Mina, how many people do you have to test just to get camp going and then subsequently just to get a preseason game going? So if you have a 90-man roster and then add in 24 coaches and then maybe at least 15 to 20 more support staff, and that's before you get to the linesmen, to the officials, to the chain gang, to the guy who wipes the ball down and runs another ball out there, to the camera people. You get my point. It keeps going and going and going and going. And while it's certainly not February, and it's not like the situation Real Sports had on this week talking about NBA testing when they're shutting the league down that week, but how many tests do you have, and how many should you be burning through on a week-to-week basis? There are 65 preseason games scheduled every summer. Do you and should you be burning enough tests to get 65 preseason games played?
And it is an interesting, it sort of raises the question of what is the value of the preseason, right? Because again, we just talked about a team that does not view it. I feel comfortable saying they do not, from a football perspective, view it the same way or value that experience the same way as some other teams. That is not universal in the NFL. It's one of the few areas where I think every team has a different answer when it comes to how important they think it is. So I truly don't know how the league will proceed, but it's definitely going to be something to keep an eye on. And you know what? I was going to talk about the Browns, but let's take questions, and then let's talk about the Browns and talk about your job. So let's take a quick break.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
Thank you, as always, for your lovely, kind, funny iTunes reviews and the questions you leave therein. Please keep in mind, Sunman Kimes reads them all, and she appreciates the people who have started to say hello to her. All right, first question is, this is a fun one. Trilly Special, and I want you to answer this too, Andrew, wants you to put together your ultimate bar trivia team with two NFL coaches and two ESPN personalities.
Okay, say this again. My ultimate trivia team.
Like a bar trivia team, yes.
Yeah, so bar trivia. I said BART, like Bay Area Rapid Transit. I'm like, what? Huh, where are we going?
Or if it's Simpsons trivia, I could help you. You get two coaches and two ESPN. He said two ESPN personalities, so.
Okay. Well, your ESPN personality, number one. Am I allowed to say that?
Yes,
so let's get you. And trivia, I think Wingo would be great.
Yeah, he's got a lot of weird knowledge.
So I think you and Wingo, and then coaches. So I want to go one old, one young.
But you don't want someone who's too, like, football myopic, right? Because, like, they're not going to, like, my mind went to Bill Belichick, but then I was like, really? What is Bill Belichick going to contribute to bar trivia? You want a man of the world.
It's not just football trivia.
Oh, no. This is bar trivia. Yeah.
So I actually do think that Belichick would be great. And if you look at his life growing up in Annapolis, his love of lacrosse, I know that sounds kind of trite, but I do think if you watch his NFL 100 thing last summer with Rich. I do think you kind of got a window into the fact that he knows a little bit more than football. But I think regardless, you want him there for the sports questions, because I don't think he would ever miss a sports question. Okay. And who else do I want? Trivia. Man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Not McVay, not Shannon, not the young guys, no offense.
I feel like Frank Reich reads a lot. That might just be because he wears glasses.
I think that's good. Frank Reich would be good. I think Pete Carroll would be fun.
Yeah. He also seems interested in, like, the world.
I think Dan Quinn's pretty well-read. I think Dan Quinn might be an interesting one.
He would be high on my just be at a bar list. I don't know about bar trivia. All right. How about Belichick and Frank Reich?
I think that's a win.
I like John Harbaugh too. And Mike Tomlin would be good. Okay. Let's go Belichick and Reich for the, and then for ESPN personalities, I got to say Bomani Jones, who knows more about like music and is really good on history. So that would be a win. And then maybe throw in my man Pablo Torre. Also, he's pretty smart.
Pablo would be great. I think I handcuffed myself here. I limited it to football. So that's why, I mean, not that you would still be number one regardless. Okay. But that's why I went Wingo. I didn't broaden the field.
You'll have more opportunities to pick people. So, first, Joseph Hodge, has a question. Which college would you be leery of picking players from? And it can be kind of position specific. He mentions that Baylor offensive players haven't been successful lately. Hopefully Denzel Mims breaks that trend. Auburn's offense. Let me think. I mean, there's always the like, you know, don't take a running back from Alabama because they have too much tread on their tires kind of thing. You know what? We actually did a study that was really interesting of production from different colleges in the NFL over like the last 10 to 20 years. Let me pull it up. So we have the best and worst colleges. And then interestingly, they have like the recent performance. So what college do you think recently is the biggest winner?
So the college recently that has cranked out the best players at a certain position?
Exactly.
Alabama D linemen?
It's Ohio State. They're just going across all positions.
Ohio State D linemen, okay. Ohio State DBs. You can't go wrong right now. Can't go wrong with Ohio State D linemen, at least of late. We think Chase Young keeps that going. The Baylor wide receiver thing is something we've talked about for a while on NFL Network. It's something Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks hammer home every year. They run three routes and you know, you're crossing your fingers and praying that they can learn it at the next level. That's one. Alabama quarterbacks historically have no success in the NFL. I hate to break it to the Dolphins here. I think Tua is the outlier, but historically, I mean, how many times are we going to throw the Richard Todd thing out there? It just hasn't happened. So, I mean, I think that is one to be leery of, but Tua is unlike any other quarterback I think we've ever seen at Alabama.
Matt Miller, NW, wants to know, he knows how much I love X-Men, the animated series. We talk about that a lot in this podcast, Andrew. He wants to know, and the theme song, what my opinion is of the Spider-Man theme song. Okay. It's incredible. I don't know if you've ever heard it. The animated Spider-Man theme song. It's like, okay. So, fun fact. I don't know if I can like play it on the show. So I gave you the Munich Conference rendition. Fun fact. It's performed, this is a cartoon from the 90s, by Joe Perry from Aerosmith. Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. Real thing that happened. Yeah.
I'm on your trivia team. I did not know that. To quote Chris Myers, I did not know that.
All right. So our last question is from Jordan, frequent question asker. He wants to know who our dream announcer crew is. So I guess... I have so many friends, so I gotta be careful here. How about this? Let's redo the question and say, which current player would you choose to do play-by-play in color? So two players you would choose to do play-by-play in color.
Okay, so current players. I'd love to hear from Sherm.
Yes,
love to hear from Josh Norman. From a quarterback perspective, let me think.
Phil Rivers?
I think Philip Rivers would be awesome, actually.
Yeah.
Just to play the aw shucks drinking game every Monday night. Like, every time someone makes a throw, it's like, aw shucks, look at that.
The Dag Nabbit alone.
Because that's his go-to for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we already know Greg Olsen can do it. He's an active Seahawk, which is so weird. That's it.
Oh, that's right.
It's kind of weird seeing Greg Olsen in a Seahawks jersey. But and I think he's actually very good. I know I tweet about this a lot. I'll throw one out. He's not an active player, but I just want to mention this. I was disappointed we never got to see Jay Cutler in the booth. I was looking forward to that. I thought it was going to be hilarious.
If you could get Jay Cutler to engage, right? It would be funny either way. Even when he's not engaged, I think maybe that's the beauty of it. It would be hysterical. But like, if you could get him to pay attention, to focus, and to care, and to be candid enough where he looks at something and just goes, like, oh man, that was awful.
Yes.
But like,
that's what we need.
It was awful. Like, yeah, like eight people there were awful. That would be great. You need someone that sees. See, I think what makes Romo so good, and at times can be his downfall, he's so over exuberant, is he sees things as a quarterback that most people don't see. Sometimes he just can't contain himself and he has to yell and yell and yell. And I think that's why you need a quarterback. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick would be good too.
Yeah, I'm gonna go for a Ryan Fitzpatrick, Richard Sherman booth. That's my dream player booth right there. I mean, Sherman.
That'd be pretty cool.
It's Sherman also just knows the game. I think he my favorite thing when he was on the Seahawks was when Richard Sherman would exploit the rules and he would explain to the refs, like, actually what I did was legal, like, and people would be so angry at home, but he was so intimately aware of what he could do at any time. It was just delightful. So, yeah, the man is a football genius.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Question for you. Having written the definitive Aaron Rodgers sit down, how do you think he would do?
First, I'll say he said he did not have interest, I think, in football media. I remember having that conversation with him. But I think he'd be great at it because he is super smart and would, you know, work really hard at it. But I do think he's not the highest energy guy, right? And I do think what you said about Romo, like, really is true. Like, you really want someone – and I know I just said I want to see Jay Cutler, and but that wasn't because I think he'd be good. That's just because I wanted to see it.
Because you want to see the train wreck.
Well, it'd just be hilarious. I mean, and anyone who's seen his show, RIP, knows that he's, like, television gold. But, yeah, I just think energy, as you know, in our business is so important. Energy and – Romo looks like he's having the time of his life, and I think I always say that that's what makes him great at it. It's not the, you know, Nostradamus stuff. All right, so enough with the questions.
Can I throw in one more?
Okay, one more.
I think Ben Roethlisberger would be a glorious disaster.
God. He would last like a game.
Seriously.
He would last.
Seriously.
That is unsustainable.
That's why it would be great. Now, if he could come on with that, you know, like Harry and the Hendersons, I've been sleeping under a bridge beard, right?
No,
and he could just throw people under the bus, and it would be in classic Ben style. It would be passive aggressive throwing people under the bus, just like subtle digs, and it would be awesome.
That is actually a really important point. Sometimes, like, the great thing about quarterbacks in the booth, like, I think of Troy Aikman, right, who I think is very good at his job. He's sometimes so audibly disappointed with quarterbacks on the field.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, you can just, he doesn't even have to say anything. You can just kind of read between the lines. You can be like, oh, you're disgusted. So you definitely want a quarterback who's willing to criticize other quarterbacks. Ben would do that. He would not be my choice for Lenny reasons, but you're right. He would do that. I do think, I wonder if Fitzpatrick would do it too. I certainly believe Cutler would be willing to. But all right, enough questions from listeners. Thank you so much for them, though. Let's get back to my questions. And let's get to my questions about the Cleveland Browns. Like I said, I'm going to talk about the AFC North at some point down the road, but I want to talk to you about this team because they are your beloved squad. You're just Cleveland sports across the board, right? You're from there.
Yeah, so it's yes and no. I am Cleveland sports across the board. I have worn their colors so proudly for so many years that, like, I often
proudly.
Feel guilty for. No, it's true. And everyone messes it up. For my actual hometown of Reston, Virginia, I am a Beltway brat, born and raised in Northern Virginia. However, my dad is from Cleveland, and my dad's family is from Cleveland, and we would spend countless weeks and months there as kids, every major holiday, so on and so forth. And in my family, you get religion from your mother, and you get sports from your father. And my dad raised us long before Sunday Ticket to be diehard Browns fans and diehard Indians fans. He wasn't the biggest NBA fan, because the Cavs weren't there when he was a kid, but we kind of made ourselves Cavs fans. If I had to rank them, they're clearly third on the list. But yes, I have been known to break things in my home and leave scars on my fists from punching things and scare my neighbors for those teams.
And honestly, as a Browns fan, that's like mild, honestly, like given what you've been through. Yeah, no, it's funny. We have that in common, right? Because I also grew up for a time in Northern Virginia, and I'm also not from Seattle. It's my dad, you know, that made me a Seattle sports fan across the board. But, you know, you and I have talked a lot about the Browns. I texted about the Browns. Those texts changed in tone as the season began and went on. And so we talked about the biggest questions for the Rams. I think the biggest question for the Browns is pretty obvious. It's the only question, which is, can Baker Mayfield go back to being the Baker Mayfield we saw as a rookie? And it is an easy question with no easy answer, Andrew, because I believe the reasons for his decline are so complex and multiple. I almost don't even know where to begin. Like, if you were to assign, you know what I mean? Like, there's like a blame pie, my friend George Sedano calls it. Like, if you were making like a pie chart in your mind, and you're like, okay, this is the offensive line, this is scheme, this is Odell Beckham Jr. maybe being hurt, I don't know. Like, you know, it's hard to know how to divvy it up. I will start by telling you, I think everyone deserves blame from last season, except maybe Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb, you don't deserve blame. But for me, when I watch Baker every time, so when I go back and watch, during the season when I'm watching, I'm taking notes, sometimes I'll notice I keep writing the same word over and over. And with him, the word I kept writing over and over all season was pressing. This dude is pressing. It is not coming easy to him. He's pushing it. He is, you know, forcing it literally, you know, and I want to know if you felt the same way and if you think that was the biggest issue.
Everything was forced last year. I'm glad you used that word, forced. And I mean for everybody, but especially for the offense as a unit, everything was forced. At the end of 2018, when they caught lightning in a bottle, they had momentum. Freddie's calling fun plays. Yay, they're winning and scoring, and they're throwing backwards passes and reverses and ends arounds and trick nonsense. It worked. And they tried to force so much of that last year, and it did not work. Start with number one, Greg Robinson, when they cut him on Labor Day weekend, which was a procedural move to clear a spot for a rookie free agent to get a rookie offensive lineman to get to the 53. They should have let Greg Robinson walk. People talk about the Browns' arrogance last year. They were loud. They were rambunctious. Part of it was, I think, a pushback by the average fan against the excessive media coverage. We're always guilty, but that's what we do. We hold up the shiny object. I think a lot of it didn't come from the team, but it came from the hype, and they bought the hype, and they just, it didn't work. But their arrogance, I think, came partly also with their roster decisions. Like, they actually thought Greg Robinson can somehow be a starting left tackle on a playoff team. It didn't work. Freddie Kitchens' cuteness and ingenuity, and Freddie's a good man. Let's just put that. I love Freddie. I really didn't know him at all. I got to know him as we got closer to the season, at the combine, at the Senior Bowl, things like that. I really like the guy. His leadership just didn't work, and there were so many other issues and factors, such as Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry barely practicing for injuries, and Odell barely getting on the field, and honestly, barely being in the right place half the time, right? Yeah. Like you said, there are a lot of reasons. Baker forced a lot of things. A lot of times where he and the wide receiver were never on the same page. Jarvis Landry fought through his injuries, put together a very good year, but they couldn't block anyone. Their play calling had no rhythm at all. And with a bad offensive line and no rhythm and no play action game, despite the fact that you almost had the league's leading rusher, Baker looked human. It got to him. He turned the ball over way too much, and it just spiraled out of control.
So you're saying calling a draw on 4th and 9 gets out of the rhythm of your – you're trying to forget
that. Well, it's one thing to call it. It's another thing to then go to the podium afterwards and say, I meant to do that.
Poor guy.
I meant to do that.
Okay, so you said a lot of things. You mentioned a lot of things, and
that was a word salad.
No. I mean, it's just so difficult to know where to begin with this team. I think it's tough because the question now isn't just what went wrong, but can Baker Mayfield bounce back? Like I said,
and can Kevin Stefanski provide the leadership that Freddie Kitchens could not? And I think that's the look. Everyone talks about, well, Baker's got to bounce back, and our friend Dan Orlovsky always goes to this because this system is meant for him and Kevin Stefanski is the right guy. Kevin Stefanski is a very impressive guy. Very impressive. But Mina, his ability to stand up there and lead an entire team, not just a position room,
right,
is a work in progress. And so that's all married here.
There are also questions about the offense. I mean, you know, were we watching Kevin Stefanski's offense in Minnesota, or were we watching Gary Kubiak's offense? I think that for a lot of people is a totally open question. I everything Kevin Stefanski has said, I found really impressive, the way he talks about football, you know, and I think that offense that we saw in Minnesota, even if it was, you know, had a heavy Kubiakian influence, so to speak, I think it's the right offense to sort of get this team back into a rhythm. I think it's the right offense to compel Baker Mayfield to stop forcing the ball. Again, there's the word forcing, to Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, or, you know, whatever, two wide receivers, right? I imagine it's not really a leap of faith to say we're probably going to see a lot more heavier sets. Forget, you know, running the ball more, which, you know, I don't think that they should run the ball exponentially more personally, even though they do have a terrific 1-2 punch, of course, at back. But I do think there needs to be a bit more diversity in terms of the personnel groupings, the blocking. And so I wouldn't be surprised if you see that. You know, it just needs to be a little more quarterback friendly. I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, Baker Mayfield, man, he was bad on play action last year. That was what I thought the weirdest thing about that offense. You know, again, like, and about Baker, right? Like, watching, I mean, it's generally weird when a quarterback becomes significantly less accurate after he was unbelievably accurate in college, and that's your hope if it's a Browns fan, that there's more years of Baker Mayfield being an elite quarterback than being a bad one. But, you know, to see him struggle so much on early downs after the play fake was really weird. And some of it had to do with protection. Some of that had to do with guys not getting open deep, I think, in particular. But a lot of that just had to do with him, honestly. So I think there are a lot of things that suggest, okay, all of the circumstances around him are going to be better. The play calling, obviously the offensive line, going out and getting Jack Conklin on the right side, Jedrick Willis on the left side, run blocking in particular, should take a leap forward with those tackles. But Baker Mayfield himself, again, needs to, he has to improve independent of those circumstances.
He does. I know winning offseason press conferences doesn't get you anywhere, but he did speak last week for the first time, you know, really since the promotional nonsense in Miami at the Super Bowl that everyone does. And he wasn't selling bows this time. He was just sitting on his back porch in Austin. I don't know if it, again, is worth anything. He seemed like a different guy. He said all the right things. He said we talked way too much and didn't put up, and it's done. It's, you know, no more talking, and Kevin Stefanski runs a great system for me. Like, he said all the right things. Like, people came away from that going, all right, this is a different guy. But, you know, can you maintain that come September, come October? What will losing 3 out of 4, just, I don't even have the schedule in front of me, what would that do to this team in September? I think it's interesting just with the whole group, how Jarvis Landry on their exit interviews after Freddie had been fired, Jarvis Landry was asked, you know, what is it that you guys want? Because they have to find a new head coach. He goes, we just want to be led. We just want to be led. And Stefanski's got the scheme. I mean, I think they're okay there. And I think people are optimistic about Joe Woods as a defensive coordinator. Just see if he can lead. And I think you do have a leader at quarterback. And if they can get on the same page, I think that's positive.
Also, Bill Callahan, man, coming. If you want to, like, do, like, a nerdy football thing, right? Or, like, if you want to sound like a football hipster and point to, like, what are the most significant, you know, changes in the offseason, that's a good one, I feel like, to point out that they brought him on as an offensive line coach.
I'm really interested to see how he and Stefanski mesh, because Callahan's obviously been a head coach. He's a veteran.
Yes.
I've heard some people rumble, and not in their building, by the way, just outside people when the hire was announced. That's not a scheme fit. I don't see how that's going to work. But he does bring a veteran set of eyes. I think it's a good move. I'm curious to see how it works. How about that? But I'm with you on Conklin and Wills, assuming he can flip from right to left. I think I unfairly hammered Greg Robinson earlier. Chris Hubbard was an issue at right tackle too.
Yeah. Well, the Browns offensive line, it's like one of those things where I think they were blamed more than they should have been for a lot of the mistakes Mayfield was making, quite frankly, but they weren't good. Let's be clear, right? It's like, it goes back to the blame pie. I think all of the Browns offense to me was one of those things where everything compounds upon each other. Yeah. Everything, you know, the wide receiver is being hurt and Baker forcing it to the wide receivers and the offensive line being bad. Not the worst. I don't think responsible for everything, but bad. Baker, you know, not responding well to pressure. All of these things, they just sort of added up to that, a rapid decline. I do want to ask you one other question about the Browns before we move on, because I think we spent so much time talking about the Browns offense and obsessing over it because of the star power that we forget about the fact that this defense was supposed to be a lot better last year than they were. Mm-hmm. They ended up 22nd in DVOA, 30th in run defense, 18th in pass rush win, and 18th in sack ratio. You know, this was a star-studded defensive line. It was a secondary that people thought would be at least above average. What was the biggest reason for the decline on the defensive side of the ball?
I think injuries early, number one, to the secondary. Remember that Rams game? I mean, they were quite literally signing guys off the street, and those guys were getting 40, 50 snaps. Obviously that's not an entire season, but that's part of it. They fell apart at the end after Miles fell apart. Olivier Vernon is not getting the same push he used to. He also played injured most of the year. He had a lower leg injury there. Yeah. He never seemed to get right. You had youth at linebacker. Joe Schobert was great, and obviously now he's gone. Chris Kirksey got injured early. Mack Wilson, I think they asked a lot of a rookie from Alabama, more than they thought they were going to need from him. And it just never gelled. I'm sure some of the blame, I've heard plenty of people want to throw it on Steve Wilks. He shares some of the blame as well. And the offense was constantly putting them in bad positions, short field, sudden change, and they constantly had to run out there and make up for questionable play calling and bad protection of the football. It just wasn't there, and it never was.
Do you have hope that, you know, we were talking about sort of whether the offense can bounce back and the factors that contribute to that. Do you have hope that the defense can bounce back as well? Because, you know, it's interesting. Again, the Browns, I feel like many people had them as one of the better off seasons in the NFL.
Yeah,
I think
again.
They won on paper, but yeah, you're going to have to see a pretty significant leap, I think, on both sides of the football, especially in a good division. Frankly, I mean, even with a Bengals team that's probably going to be a lot better this year, we'll talk about that division later. Do you think it'll be enough?
I think now that the playoffs are expanded, I am bullish that, yes, they can get to 9 wins. Schedule doesn't do them any favors, certainly. But, you know, everyone's even on the schedule. It's so hard to project what the schedule is actually going to play out, how it's actually going to play out when we're sitting here in June. I do think they have the talent to get there. They're going to need to get more from, defensively from Greedy Williams, right?
Yeah.
They're going to need Grant Delpit to make a contribution immediately. They're going to need Joseph to play like the first round pick the Raiders hoped he was a couple of years ago. I mean, they had a huge hole at safety last year,
totally
too, made worse by injuries.
That Carl Joseph.
Yeah. Carl Joseph.
This is my favorite
there.
Thing, Andrew, I mean, about doing the offseason reviews is you are reminded of who was on every team. I go through team by team, depth chart by depth chart, and I'm like, oh, okay, Carl Joseph. Yeah,
forgot about him. Oh, that's where that guy is. I have two times that usually happens. Number one, when we like do our offseason shows like we're doing now, and you put up like so you're coming into the full screen, then you're getting to the guest, and the full screen's, you know, ads and losses, and you throw the full screen up, and I hadn't looked at it before we actually get on the air, and you're doing it live, and you go, you almost want to go on there, oh, I forgot they signed him, except then you're undercutting yourself before the segment, so you don't. That, and then there's the other time, whenever you go to a training camp, right, and you walk into that training camp, and, you know, you're probably exhausted from jet lag, and you're rubbing the sleep out of your eyes, and you've got a Starbucks, and someone hands you a roster, and you're going through the roster, and you're like, oh, wow, that guy's here? Really? And well, there's usually like four or five of those.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Speaking of training camps, Adam Schefter just reported that the NFL has told all of its teams they must stay at their training facilities for this summer's camps. So we will not be getting – how many teams train elsewhere? What percentage? It's pretty small.
That's a good question. A lot of teams have moved home in recent years. A lot of teams are really close. The Redskins are 2 hours down the road in Richmond, or on Sunday afternoon traffic on 95, 9 hours down the road. The Rams stay in LA-ish because they go to Irvine. Right, which is, you know, feels also like 9 hours away. So let's think. There's the Cowboys go to Oxnard. They can't do that. The Bills go to Rochester.
I've been there. Oh, yeah, I've been there, yeah.
Redskins go to Richmond. Browns are still in Berea, although they've talked about Columbus. I'd say there's five or six.
Yeah, it's pretty small, yeah.
Because the Panthers, Spartansburg was an hour away.
That's right, because I think I've mentioned this here before, but I did a story on Zion Williamson last year, and his high school coaches told me that when the Panthers would train in Spartanburg, which is a small town where Zion grew up, the coaches would walk over and watch Zion practice. They'd be like, hey, so you ever think about playing football?
What are you doing here?
You look exactly like our defensive end, Julius Peppers. Anyways, that's a little minor change, but it's a thing. Listen, before we get to our usual five questions, I promised people I'd ask you a little about your job because it is really fascinating. And I think it's like one of those dream jobs for a lot of people. Like, you know, I just think it's kind of like ice cream taster. Like, it's a thing where people see you do it. And if, you know, it's something you think would be really fun to try. And what I really wanted to ask you, I mean, your whole story, how you got into it in the first place, is interesting. You've been doing it for years now, but I just kind of want to talk to you about how you do it. Like, what is a Sunday like in the life of Andrew Siciliano from the moment you walk into the studio, like on your back end? Did I even say what, for those, I'm assuming everyone who is listening knows that Andrew Siciliano hosts Red Zone. I don't know if I actually said that. But now I've said it. So I was wondering if you could just explain what it's actually like for you functionally to do your job.
Sure. I'm going to start this, with the biggest cliche, but it's true. And that is, can't do it without a great crew. And I'd like to thank the crew. Not reasonable to expect anyone to be able to, at times, like late in the season, watch 11 games at once. It's just not, our brains aren't built that way. So I do have a great crew, and I have two or three guys standing, and hopefully this year social distancing doesn't limit this, but standing on stage with me. I watch at DirecTV in LA, and we have a massive wall of televisions, much like you would see at a bar. And I kind of pace in front of that wall the entire Sunday for 6.5 hours. And I have these three guys with me. Usually two by my side and one within earshot at a computer, getting real-time stats as they come in through the NFL's internal system. And those two guys are basically my spotters. They're my lifeline. It's Daniel and it's Eric and it's William, and they rotate throughout the day. And they have the rosters of every team, because amazingly, I cannot remember every single name and number for all 32. And there's roster turnover every week, and teams swap out punters, and there are times you're just like, who the bleep is that? They have their rosters printed out in hard copy right in front of me. And really their job is to help me understand the significance of what's happening. So it's not, look, I could read the screen and see that Jared Goff has it on the 22 and the Fox graphic says it's 3rd and 7 and read the score off the top, right? But it's their job to explain to me when there's a red challenge flag on the field, who challenged, what was the call on the field, you know, things so that you just want to be accurate for the person sitting on the couch at home. So when we go to a game, oh, Anthony Lynn is challenging. What's he challenging? Like, what was the call, right? And that's where those guys are invaluable. And look, sometimes it's just the simple things. Like, my head is looking at a game to my left, and all of a sudden, no, I got to look to the game on my right, and I see an official running down to spot the ball and a team running down the field to snap the ball because the clock is running. I don't know who caught it, right?
Yeah.
And they could quickly point to a roster and show me it's Emmanuel Sanders and then put up 2-5 with their hands like a basketball referee and tell me that it was a 25-yard gain. So it's a lot of that. We've been working together for all these years. I could not do the job without them, or with producer Bill Wagner, who's the only person allowed to talk in my ear the entire time for 7 hours. And there's a lot of screaming and yelling and finger pointing and emotions, but at the end of the day, we all love each other. And it's kind of like landing planes, and it's awesome.
So we're in Pacific time, 10 a.m.
Yeah.
If it's London, it's even worse, but 10 a.m. Actually, wait, the London games aren't. Wait. They don't.
The London game we don't have on Sunday.
Yeah, right. Because
yeah,
they're.
So yeah. That's one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 10 a.m. to about 4 p.m. is usually when the afternoon games end here. Yeah.
Contractually, we have to be off the air by the time NBC comes on the air at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific.
8, so 5. Okay. So you're not taking a lot. You're not breaking. Like.
Nope.
That's okay. So is the number one question you get asked, how do you pee?
That is the number one question I can't ask. Yes. And the answer is I don't. I mean, it's not.
Do you not drink a lot of coffee beforehand for that purpose? Like, do you try not to overhydrate?
You've seen me. We've worked together with the Rams. You know that I pretty much only drink 3 things or 4 things. Coffee, water, scotch and beer in no particular order, and I only pretty much drink coffee on Sunday. I get a 5-shot Americano on the way in around 6:45.
5 shots?
And then a 5-shot Americano on the way in, and then our stage manager pretty much hands me a new cup of like styrofoam office coffee every 20 minutes starting at 10 when we actually begin the show.
Second question. So you don't have to name teams or anything like that, but we, the viewers, when we watch Red Zone, we know when it goes to, like, you know, what I'm going to ask here, like, I don't know, the Jags offense a couple of years ago or whatever. There's certain teams that are like, oh no, when they show up on Red Zone. Do you feel the same way? Are there certain teams too you're like, yes? Maybe that's what the way you can answer, but you're always pumped when you see them on Red Zone. Like,
I've talked to, like, I tell these stories, like, I'm open with this. I don't mind. Like, there are times, and here's what people have to understand. There are times when there's only one place to go. Like, like, especially early in the 1 o'clock Eastern time window, you know, they all have the same number of breaks built into their game, right? So you might have an instance in which 4 teams or 5 teams of the opening 7 games go 3 and out. Okay. So that means they all go to their first break, and 5 of those 7 games are in a commercial, at which point you have 2 games to choose from, and you're about to go to one of them, which seems to be the better of the two options. And then all of a sudden someone tweaks an ankle and they call a timeout. And so you're stuck with the Jags and the Jets, all due respect, of course. And then my Twitter blows up with, what are you doing showing me Blake Bortles on his own 18-yard line, you jackass? You must have money on this game. You must have bet on this game. You must have Leonard Fournette on your fantasy team. You have Fournette on your fantasy team, don't you? Why would you subject me to this? Do you know how much I pay for Sunday Ticket? I don't pay for this crap. And you're like, dude, it's the only game on. Like it's not personal. And for the record, I don't gamble. Like, I play fantasy. I've never bet on a game in my entire life. I know people find that hard to believe. It does nothing for me. Now, I play blackjack. Like, I'll go to Vegas. Right? I've never bet on a game in my life. So the answer is never gambling.
You got to say, this is my catch-all response now to fans. I hate all of your teams equally. I hate
well,
them
I've
all.
I've done that too. Like, I've done that every now and then.
I specifically wanted to anger you, Patriots fan 312. Yeah. It's you I wanted to anger today. I don't
friendly
know,
reminder, every national play-by-play person hates your favorite
team. We hate them all. We hate them all.
Hate your favorite team.
Okay, along those lines, we got five quick questions for you, Andrew, and then I'll let you go.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
All right. As always, the fifth question is from Lenny. I didn't write it. I apologize, you know, for his general insouciance, and he has no respect for, you know, decorum and those kinds of things. First question, something I think a lot of us have been fantasizing about, especially when I watch movies and TV, is like, when this is all over with the coronavirus, where would I like to go? And you are a very well-traveled man. Mm-hmm. You've taken some really exotic and interesting trips. Is there somewhere you are thinking about going?
Yes, absolutely. There are two. I mean, I can give you 10. I'll give you the two that I was thinking about this year, most notably. Well, I did have a trip to Israel planned in June that obviously got canceled. That one was actually kind of on the books. But the two that I want to do, and the two that I tried to do this year but couldn't coordinate really, were number one, I want to go to Antarctica, but I want to do it specifically. I want to fly to Ushuaia or El Calafate and sail and do it in which you're on one of the boats in which you can actually camp on the continent for a night or two. So I want to check the box to go to Antarctica while we still have it. I also want to, and I was in Israel a couple of years ago, but it was during the summer and the weather was not right. It was awful. I also want to go to Jordan and I want to hike what's known as the Jordan Trail down to Petra. So not just take the bus from Amman to Petra and see Petra and take the photo for Instagram, but I want to start about 4 days to the north and hike with Bedouins down into Petra.
Well, that was very detailed and exotic and interesting. I'm like, I don't know, maybe Paris.
Oh, I go to Paris too. That would be awesome. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, at this point, I'll go to like suburban Virginia, right? Where my parents live. Like, I would love to see that. But, okay. Question two. This is something I've been asking everyone, but what's a quarantine content recommendation you have? Something you've watched or listened to perhaps?
Sure. Can I cheat and go one or two? Like, I think the Ricky Gervais show Afterlife is really good. It's dark, but it's really heartening as well. I think it's good. So I like that. I love Killing Eve, and obviously, like anyone can say Ozark. I mean, yeah, Ozark's awesome. Ozark's great. This season was amazing. The outlier that I'm sure most of your listeners haven't watched is called Fauda, FAUDA. Okay. It's on Netflix.
Don't
look
know
it
that
up.
One.
The
Fauda.
The protagonist looks exactly like Jay Glazer. Okay. Exactly like Jay Glazer. And it's about an undercover Shin Bet Israeli intelligence unit that operates in both Israel and the West Bank and in subsequent seasons in Gaza without giving anything away. And this they're modeled after a real unit and they're a bilingual unit. So they all grew up with like one Arab parent or one Arabic speaking parent. And so they can go easily between both sides of the border. And it's a really, really good show. It's got subtitles and it's got some dubbed, but it's really good.
I want to clarify, I was not laughing because of the premise, but because I Google imaged Fauda and he does, in fact, look exactly like Jay Glazer.
He looks really exactly like Jay Glazer.
Okay. Question three. We talked about which coach you would like to have on your bar trivia team. Which coach would you go on a road trip with?
Which coach would I go? It's going to sound so homerish if I say McVay.
Dude, I think come on, McVay.
One of them.
McVay. Would you really choose him?
I
like him. I like him a lot, but I'd want a quiet coach on a road trip.
Okay, but what kind of road trip then?
I guess people respect the silent, the napping, and you know that's my kind of vibe. so maybe you're like, if you, like, it sounds like you're looking for a conversationalist. So,
oh, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't stop talking. We were on a flight once, and yeah, no, ever stop talking. Which coach would I want to go on a road trip? Why am I having trouble with these coaching questions?
There's a lot of them to choose from.
What coach would I want to go on a road? Could we do like a cool old man road trip and
yeah,
go like
Vic it's whatever Fang- you want.
So Vic Fangio, Pete Carroll, Bruce Arians.
Yeah, Bruce Arians is a
right?
good choice.
And that's like the old, that's like the
like life lessons kind of situation. Yeah.
Yeah, or remember the old movie Cocoon with all the old people hanging around the pool?
That's
remember
so
that?
Random. Yeah, yeah, yeah. those are good choices. Yeah, I would. Arian's a good one. I think Anthony Lynn's a super interesting guy. I'd love to talk to him for a few hours. I think John Harbaugh would be really interesting too, and seems really good natured. So those would be good. Kyle Shanahan, just to pick his brain, honestly, would be a fun one for me.
Well, Kyle Shanahan for the music. Kyle Shanahan control the radio.
He's got cool taste. Okay, last question from me before we get to question from Lenny. So one of the biggest surprises from working with you last summer was watching you just break out into song when Taylor Swift came up. Didn't know you were a huge Swiftie. I now know that. What is her best song?
Mina, my favorite Taylor Swift song is New Romantics.
That's a good one. That's a true, like, Swiftie answer, I feel like. Nothing, you know, like, not too mainstream, not too much of a deep cut. It's a good one. I respect that.
And feel free, everyone, to savage me and ravage me on Twitter and make fun of me. Go ahead.
Now my listeners would never. Last question, as always, comes from Lenny, not responsible for his thought process. He wants to know, I feel like you've been asked this before too, along with the Pete question.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you and Scott Hansen got in a fight, who would win? Caveat, you're allowed to use weapons.
So this is like an Anchorman thing,
yes.
Lenny?
Yes, a thousand.
Like in an alley in San Diego?
Yes, oh, yeah, you can use whatever weapons you want.
Lenny, I would kick his and Lenny, I would be honored, Lenny, if you would join me and you could go in first, you can disable him, you could bite his ankles, Lenny. I know you're a peaceful dog, but if you want to go in there and help me out, Lenny, I'd be honored to roll with you, dude. Like, roll with me.